From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we're in the middle of our 24th year. And we want to thank everybody who's helped us along the way, including our guest, Paul Starkey. Paul, good to see you.
Well, hello, Bob. It's great to be back here in front of the golden mic.
Yes, you have the golden mic.
How long has it been since we've had it?
24 years. But it's been too long since you've been here.
I think it's been like it's since the beginning of the pandemic.
About 2.5 years. I think it has. We've had you on the show, but it's been by phone.
Yeah.
And we forgot what we looked like.
Yeah, and it's much better to be in front of the golden mic because I'm completely at ease talking to you, and just so good to see you.
Oh, very good.
We had the opportunity to see each other, of course, last year at the annual dinner, which we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
But I'm sorry, I'm going to take the golden mic. I'm going to steal it. I've got my St. Vincent de Paul commercial. This is
I want to hear it.
It is just incredibly exciting. We have over 50 conferences throughout the diocese. And they're growing. I'm so excited that we have a new conference at Holy Trinity in El Dorado County. Yeah. That is just a wonderful conference there.
Up on the hill.
Yeah. And we're just so glad to have that sort of zone defense, to have a St. Vincent de Paul conference station there. They're up and running. We are in renewal. St. Rose in Sacramento, St. Joseph in North Sacramento, Holy Rosary in Woodland, also with Our Lady of Guadalupe. In downtown Sacramento.
Right.
And when I say renewal, these are places where there have been conferences, but the pandemic hit us hard. And so we're going in and sort of reconstituting, getting everybody sort of back into place and trying to just renew and revitalize. And it's exciting because the conference life is critical to the society. The way that we're set up is very much local. And so we serve locally. So it's so important that we serve the people in El Dorado. You know, we serve the people in North Sacramento. We serve the people, you know, out in Redding, you know, throughout the entire Sacramento diocese.
Right.
So it's quite a command. It's quite a thing that we have to do. But again, we're following the gospel values, you know, Matthew 25, you know, to serve the poor, you know, feed the poor and, all of that. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to emphasize today, when we're in this spirit of renewal, I want to ask all of your audience members, if you're not involved in society, think about joining now.
Mm-hmm.
The Sacramento Council is at this exciting new stage where the council itself is under revitalization. We have a new executive director, Denise O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
She is amazing. She gets her done. She's just done a wonderful thing, lots and lots of things. We just had our 3-year strategic plan. The council got together and identified what we're going to be working on in the next 3 years. And, of course, the primary thing is to live our Vincentian vocation through the service and our formation. You know, we train and everything. And, you know, the society is a Catholic organization. It's a lay organization. And like the Knights of Columbus and other groups, we're constantly inviting people in the pew to say, look, you know, join us and be part of that. So in order to do that, you can support with the participation, being accepting. We don't like to call for volunteers. We call for Vincentians. We call for people that are called, people that have a vocation, that get a tug at their heart to say, I want to do something. So you can participate in the works of the society. You can support the society financially. All of those things are really welcome. But we're in this time of renewal, so we're looking to get financial stability so we can do the kinds of things we need to do. Our thrift store, as you and I, we've talked about, has had ups and downs. We are in ups right now. God bless your audience and everyone who's supporting the store. That is critical that that store is a twofer or a threefer.
Mm-hmm.
We bring in the donations from all of our wonderful folks that are donating. We have people that can come to the store, can get things that are affordable. We have people that come in and they get those collectibles. Any profits that we make, that turns around to, you know, support the programs of St. Vincent de Paul. So it's very, very important. And we want to expand, you know, the store system, but we want to do other things. And we have one of our big programs is the Exodus program.
Right.
And this is the subject of the Catholic Appeal this year. So thank you, Bishop Soto, for supporting St. Vincent de Paul in the Exodus Project. So what is the Exodus Project? It's one of those ways we serve the poor. Right. This is where we are helping people who are returning from the prison life and that culture back into their families, back into their communities, and assisting them with that transition. It's had a high success rate. This was inspired by Bishop Soto. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
You know, he had been asking about how can we do this? And so this is a wonderful project.
This is not a model from someplace else. This is our own.
I have to say that it is our own. It is something that other groups are doing similar kinds of things, but the Vincentian approach, I think, is unique to us. And so I think that it's something that as past president, I didn't see it coming. Hmm. I never envisioned that we would be doing something like this on this scale. But again, it's part of the Catholic Appeal. We ask people to support the Catholic Appeal because, again, that's another twofer. You know, you support the Catholic Appeal, you're supporting Catholic education, you're supporting your local parish,
right.
You're supporting St. Vincent de Paul and the Exodus Project. So the Catholic Foundation, that's a pretty good way to
it sure is.
Do your Lenten alms. You
know? Yeah, and you know you're going to get the best bang for the buck there is.
Yeah, the Catholic Foundation runs an excellent program, and they do strategic, I call it strategic giving. Mm-hmm. You know, where they're looking to say, you know, where can we get the bang for our buck? Where can we as Catholics do the most in the things that we care about? And every year, they will sponsor a project, and it's almost like a highlight of the good work that the Catholic Church does throughout the world.
Well, this, you know, the Exodus Project, we've talked with Rabbi Seth Castleman a number of times on the air, and it just...
Can't keep him off the air, can you?
No, and it's mind-boggling how it's growing and how it's already bearing fruit. You know,
bearing fruit.
And, I mean, we're talking about keeping people, getting that recidivism rate down. And how do you do it? You know, people need jobs, they need housing, they need contacts with the outside world that aren't going to get them back into trouble. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the number one thing, you know.
And what the key is, in addition to all of that physical support, the key, I think, is the Vincentian approach of the one-on-one,
right.
Meeting Christ in the person that you're helping. And the program is set up with that, with mentors. And you can find out more about all of the programs at St. Vincent de Paul and the Exodus Project. And I used to try to give the website. I'm not going to do it, Bob.
Yeah, it's too hard.
All you have to do.
Too many hyphens and dashes.
No, don't even bother anymore. I tried it three times this morning. Whatever your web browser is, you go in there and you type in Sacramento SVDP.
That's what I do, and it works.
St. Vincent de Paul. And you're gonna hit our website, and there is just click away, all kinds of information about what we do, and again this ongoing invitation to people to say, look, this society's been around for we're celebrating next year next month is our celebration for our society's founding, which was in 1833.
Right.
Okay. This society exploded onto the world. By 1845, it was in St. Louis, Missouri.
Wow.
And today it is all over the world, international organization. But the key is locally. What in your parish, you know, what is your parish doing all that it can to serve the poor? And the parishes are doing fantastic work. Don't get me wrong. It's amazing. But are we having that encounter, that physical encounter? Do you have that opportunity? And if not, join St. Vincent de Paul or form a conference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can help you to do that.
And they're primarily on the parish level.
Exactly.
But sometimes you even maybe have two parishes that are close by that might have one.
Parishes will join up resources, mm-hmm. and work together. There's all kinds of combinations. The ideal combination, though, is within the local parish.
Right.
And as part of that, again, this is a lay organization separate from the church ministries,
right.
But an important part and partner of that.
Sure.
And we just appreciate all of the parish priests throughout the diocese who have just been giving immeasurable support. As I talked about the renewal, those pastors at St. Rose and St. Joseph, North Sacramento, up in Holy Trinity, you know, they allowed us to come in and embraced us and embrace the work that we're doing. So we're very grateful for that, because it really does take, you know, a partnership with the actual church to set this up and so then to do the work.
You say that, you know, the pandemic really hit you hard. How did that specifically affect the society and the work you try to do?
I think it affected every single organization. It just must have, because, for example, the society, we're based in the home visit.
Right.
We knock on
you
the door.
You go out. You don't have an office. You go out.
We ask people, may we come into your home? We're going to deliver some food. We'll talk to you about what you need, utilities, rent relief, what's going on with the family, other resources. But we do that in a personal encounter, face-to-face, in someone's living room. You know,
right.
if they invite us in, we come in, and that's what we call the home visit. That is so different than what we were forced to do for the last 2.5 years, which was, believe it or not, some of the conferences, my own wonderful conference, Our Lady of Grace in West Sacramento, we continued the home visits, but it was sort of like DoorDash. We would say, you know, we're going to stop by, you know, it's 3 o'clock, a good time, and we would have our masks on, we would come up to the door, knock on the door, step away, lots of physical space, you know, and would do that. That is, I don't know that Jesus intended that to be a personal encounter, but it was better than nothing.
Yes, yes.
We still do wonderful work, you know, with connecting with people on the telephone. If someone calls, we call them back. And, you know, we help people within our means. We coordinate with other groups, you know, the Sacramento Food Bank and the government charities that are out there.
Sure.
Coordinating all that. But for us, it's the home visit. It's the personal encounter. So when you say what happened, it was like, it was a stop, you know.
Just stop.
Everybody was saying, wait, what are we going to do now? You know, and so we learned, you know, we got on Zoom, you know, found out what Zoom was.
I've said it before. When I was a kid, Zoom was breakfast cereal, you know,
exactly.
It's hot water and some brown sugar and you stirred it up and it was Zoom.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, the positives of this pandemic were that we learned that across the whole Diocese of Sacramento, we can connect much better than we ever thought through this type of, virtual experience.
Right.
We've done trainings virtually. We've had meetings virtually. It still is better to be in person.
Sure.
No one's going to convince me otherwise. There's lots of good things you can do. And so now going forward in 2023, we'll do both. We'll have our cake and eat it too. We'll do Zoom when it's appropriate or whatever virtual platform that's going to be. Because I don't want to give a commercial for one particular brand.
That's right. There are others.
There are others.
Yeah.
But you know, we're gonna do both. We're gonna meet in person, and now the conferences are meeting in person. Again, the conferences are reforming. The conferences are forming. It's almost like the Catholic Church is coming out, you know, of the cave. You know, it's like, you know, we're out of the cave, the protective cave. We're seeing the light, and we're saying, okay, what does it mean to be Catholic in 2023? How do we revitalize this church going forward? So St. Vincent de Paul, I think, is on the cutting edge of this. We survived, you know, and now we're going forward and are going to have a rebirth out of this. So it's exciting, and I'm seeing that in other church programs as well. I was just talking to someone who was involved with the catechumens,
right?
You know, and that program just continues. You know, we just keep doing it and bringing new people in the church, giving them the joys of what it means to be a Catholic. And so, you know, things continue. And I've said this in the past. I'll just say it one more time. Bishop Soto was a true leader during this period of time.
Yep.
There was no ground rules. There were no binder you could pull out and say, what do you do in a pandemic?
Yeah.
And he was a model leader and basically, you know, was a good shepherd and got us through, you know, a very difficult time. We're not out of the woods as far as I'm concerned. You know, we still have variants and there's things we need to think about. When we do our home visits, we're still very safe to do that. You know, all of the kinds of things that, you know, hopefully the churches are still doing. You have, you know, the disinfectants and, you know, all that stuff and wearing the mask when it's appropriate. But, it, you know, we're at a new point and we have moved on. The other thing, I always mention this because I'm always surprised by this. Did you know that St. Vincent de Paul is heavily involved in disaster relief?
Yes.
I did not know that when I was president.
Only since we've had so many fires and disasters in this area. And now, I mean, I'm sure the St. Vincent de Paul in Manteca and various places is active right now, even as we speak.
Yeah, it's funny to me because when I say I was surprised, when I was council president and people were saying, well, you know, we had this national disaster committee, and I'm going, I thought we did home visits. I thought we gave out food. This society has internationally has always been involved in disaster relief, which is really when the poor need help, right?
Sure.
Who's
is.
The most hurt?
They're the ones that get hurt.
Yeah, and so for us, under the leadership of Judy Dietlein, who was a past president, she's now actively involved in disaster relief. She's involved at higher levels.
Right.
And so she has, been a leader in this area. And, for the fires, we were responsive to those in the north.
Didn't you actually set up a place in Chico to help?
Yeah, and other places.
Yeah.
And those are ongoing.
Yeah.
Those
to help people just deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then with the floods, we were, doing our best, to coordinate on that. What's really funny is that St. Vincent de Paul is not a, quote, first responder. We're the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth responder.
Right.
We don't go. Our boots are on the ground from the beginning all the way through.
Right.
So we're still working in disaster relief. And if you go to our webpage, you'll say we're asking for, help for disaster relief
sure.
and fires and floods. And,
sure.
and that's why. Because we don't stop. We keep on going. So lots of good things going on. But what I really wanted to talk about was what I'm here to talk about, which is what you and I love, which
yes.
is this annual benefit dinner.
Yes.
So there is a lot of information. It is all on the website, Sacramento SVDP. It's easy this year, Bob. Bob, I got my ticket in less than 5 seconds.
Wow. You're Paul Starkey.
No. If I can do it, everyone listening to me can do this. You go online. It says register and pay online. You click and you do it. It's fast.
It's done.
And then you click again for your meal choices. How easy is that?
That is great.
So,
can you click two meal choices?
I tried. No, they're very good about that.
Meal is very good. It's always excellent.
It's surprisingly good for this kind of event. It is always good. But what's really good is, the in-person coming together in a safe way. All of these folks that, care about the mission of the society. And that's what this annual benefit dinner is. It's a dinner for charity. And we are raising as much money as we can to fund all these different programs that I've been talking about.
I remember a couple of years ago, you had to do it virtually, and I had the great honor of emceeing it from my bedroom. I thought I remember saying to my wife, I said, this is so strange.
Yeah.
And I had to bring Joe Alves on and yourself, and but it worked.
It worked, and bless you for doing that. I mean, that was, you're a real trooper, and
I think you guys sent me a DoorDash dinner.
the need didn't go away during the pandemic.
No.
We needed to keep doing what we're doing, and so we did. This year, the theme is Faces of Hope, which again, when we say as Vincentians, when we do our personal encounters, we see the face of Christ in those we serve, and so that's the idea about the Faces of Hope, and the society always talks about hope. One of our mottos is we serve in hope,
right?
Because that is what you have to do in when you're dealing with poverty. We've always had poverty, we always will. So how do you get through that? How do you serve Christ? You do it in hope, mm-hmm. and you literally trust in Jesus.
Yep.
You say, hey, there's going to be a way. I've seen multiple miracles in this society, and it just happens, and it's an amazing thing. This dinner is a homecoming for us. It's going to be at the Doubletree at Arden again. Our special guest is Father Dan Madigan. So if you're going to have a homecoming, bring in someone who epitomizes service to the poor and all the things that Father Madigan has done throughout his career.
I think you're going to need Golden One with Father Madigan.
Well, that's why you need to get your ticket soon. In fact, after April 1st, I believe, and this is not a joke, I think the ticket price goes up. So go online, get your ticket. Look for ways, especially if you have businesses, to support the dinner. We have sponsorships, and that information is available there. We always enjoy table sponsors because we have, tables, rounds of, I think it's like 8 or 10.
Right.
And it's always nice that, your business can say, we sponsored this,
sure.
this group or this
right.
table. Maybe you can sponsor a conference. The price of the dinner for some folks is going to be a little bit of a stretch, especially now.
Right.
So, we still, this is a charity fundraiser. So we're, we're going to charge the price of the dinner, but that is to get charity and stuff. And so it helps when people are sponsors and do that. The other thing is, and you know this, and on radio I'll just show your audience the beautiful program we have every
year. Yes.
It is a gorgeous program, and businesses are highlighted in the program, and it's just a wonderful thing.
Well, the whole event has such an uplifting feel to it, and always a great guest speaker as well. And Father Madigan will bring down the house. I mean, I attended the St. Vincent, Bishop Gagos Maternity Home dinner in September, their annual dinner, and he was just there, but he had something he wanted to announce. You know, and he wasn't part of the program, and nobody wanted him to sit down. Tell us more, Father. You know, it was just so wonderful.
Yeah, if we're going to have a reconvene and a regathering, kind of a homecoming event, what a wonderful person to be our keynote speaker. And then we recognize every year we do this. We recognize our benefactor of the year. And so I'll hold off on that announcement, because we'll do that.
That will be the surprise.
But, and there will be other surprises as well. It's always a surprise if I get a seat, because what I do, I'm over there, I'm talking to people and stuff, and then I look around and all the chairs are gone.
Your seat is always taken by somebody else.
But, hopefully, have they arranged to have you at the front table as a
I don't know.
All right. Well, I go to the website and check for Dot O'Connor. Dot, okay. Are you listening? Bob is looking for his seat. But no, it could not be easier this year. It's a wonderful event. It's a great cause. This is the 17th annual.
Wow.
It's been 17 years. And when you look back over the 17 years, over the
17, wow.
You know, just, you know, the again, I always come back to the Catholics in the pew support St. Vincent de Paul. And as a result of that, over the last, you know, we were incorporated here in Sacramento, in I believe, in 1965. Mm-hmm. But we have had St. Vincent de Paul throughout the diocese long before that. And it is just exciting to see the growth of the society. And with that growth, it's not just growth for, you know, the sake of getting big. We're still mostly volunteers, but we have the opportunity with bringing on an executive director, for example, to do those kinds of things we've wanted to do, you know. So again, the thrift store is doing well. We have these new projects. We're bringing in new conferences, but we would like to get our own building, you know, and have an opportunity to do some of our programs on site again, in person. Mm-hmm. So a lot of dreams out there. But one of the things I realized that with the Holy Spirit does not work on my time, Bob.
Yeah.
When I was council president, I had a full agenda for the Holy Spirit, all the things that we need to get accomplished. And the Holy Spirit said, well, that's all fine and good, Paul, but I'm going a different direction.
Yeah.
And we did. And lo and behold, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's interesting how that works, isn't it? The old, if you want to hear God laugh, tell him your plans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That has been my story.
Yeah.
That's been my story. But. Yeah. The society is thankful to you for the opportunity to, you know, talk to your listeners and let them know about these events, and again, to not only encourage the support, but really look into your hearts and say, is this a time when I should get involved, myself and my wife should get involved, myself and my husband should get involved, my family should get involved. You know, we have lots of opportunities. We do this wonderful event in many of the conferences called Bundle Sunday, where that big St. Vincent de Paul truck, we roll it out.
Right.
You know, we put it in the church parking lot. And I'm telling you, Bob, I need teenagers. I need strong teenagers, because I can't get in that truck anymore.
Yeah.
You know, but they're hopping up there and they're putting the bags in and having a blast. So,
well, I've got a strong teenager or
all right,
two.
Well, we're, yeah. We will be in contact. Our Lady of Grace is having its event the weekend of last weekend in April.
We were just by Our Lady of Grace yesterday, one of my daughters and I. We've gone to Mass there a number of times, and we had a something we had to do in Sacramento, and I said, well, let's go through West Sac on the way home to Davis, and we did. And I said, you want to go to Whitey's Jolly Cone? And I said, she says, ice cream? Are you kidding me?
Excellent.
We flip a U on Jefferson, and we go down. It was closed.
Oh, no.
Just out of the blue, it was closed. It was raining, pouring. And I thought, it's not closed, is it? And
Oh my gosh. Well, I don't know. Maybe you have to call ahead, but when, I will tell you.
Yeah, call ahead for ice cream.
When they're open, the parking lot is full.
Well, that's the first thing we noticed was, wait a minute, because the times we've been there, it's like you got to park on a side street.
Yeah. So I've done my two commercials. I'm very grateful, and your audience will be grateful that I got to get out of here.
Well, Paul, always a joy. Thanks for all you do, and I'm going to talk to my wife about St. Vincent de Paul.
Thank you. Yeah. That would be great. And I just encourage that because, like I said, this is a, you know, post-pandemic, we're looking at some very interesting needs out there.
Yeah.
You know, and in order to meet that need, it's like, you know, we need people to, you know, go to the vineyard.
Yeah.
So we're looking for workers. So, you know, people pray about it. That's all I say.
Very good. We will pray. Thanks so much, Paul.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
This is Julie Sly, editor of Atlet Herald Magazine, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, Julie, for that wonderful introduction. We had a chance to sit down with former district attorney Jan Scully, and we're going to bring you that interview now. But yes, I greatly appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. And I know that the diocese and Bishop Soto especially appreciate your great work with the Independent Review Board. Jan, of course, was the Sacramento County District Attorney for 20 years. And thank you for all your service there as well. That's not an easy job.
Well, it had its challenges, but... so many great people working in that office, they always make me look pretty good.
And that's an elective office.
It is, yes.
What makes a person decide to run for attorney for a district attorney in say Sacramento County or any other county in California?
You know, I think probably motivations and reasons vary from person to person, but I grew up in that office as a lawyer and saw an opportunity that I felt like I had ideas, and I just was always passionate about our community and advocating for victims and our community at large. And so I saw an opportunity to run and actually lead the office in some directions that I thought would be well serving the community, and I was fortunate enough to be elected five terms.
I was going to say, if you served 20 years in elective office, you must have been doing something right because people kept returning you to office.
Well, I was very, very blessed to the opportunity, and like I said, I never lost my passion and just really treasure the opportunity to have served.
It seems to me it's a really, really difficult job for anyone, especially someone like yourself. And you've got compassion, and yet you have that sense of justice. How do you balance that as a human being?
Well, you know, I think that even our faith suggest that we were guided by passion, but we have rules, and there's always a sense of justice and accountability that needs to be had.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that actually the ethics required of a prosecutor always dovetailed nicely into my Catholic faith.
Oh, very good. And we hear a lot these days about the term restorative justice. What does that mean, and how does that work?
you know what? I'm not sure what that means anymore.
Yeah.
Because we seem to have gone off on a different track, so to speak, on our definition of justice. Restorative justice used to be really to where we tried to make the victim whole,
mm-hmm.
But create some reconciliation between the victim and the offender, so that hopefully there could be positive outcomes on both sides.
Right. Yeah, it's a difficult balance for sure. Well, Jen, we greatly appreciate you taking the time to be with us. You're the chairwoman of the Independent Review Board here in the Diocese of Sacramento. A big job. I won't say a thankless job, but a tough job. Tell us about exactly what that involves and how that came about.
Well, I don't think it's one thankless or hard, if I can say that, because there are 10 members that make up the Independent Review Board, and they're all amazing, dedicated members who come from a variety of backgrounds, ethnically, socially. I mean, we just have such great diversity and such caring in terms of making sure that children are protected within our diocese, but that there's a fair process, and there's fairness that's not tainted by bias or any other kind of agenda. The credibility and integrity of each member is just, I'm just so proud to be part of this board. And so I see our job for the Independent Review Board really is to be an independent consultative body to Bishop Soto.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and we all take that very seriously. And I view my job really as making sure each member feels comfortable in expressing their views, and it does express their views, that we're able to do that in a respectful way and have consensus whenever we can, and that the process that we engage in is a fair, just process.
So exactly what is your charge?
Well, essentially our charge is to make two determinations. If there's a complaint or allegation that comes in against the member of the clergy regarding child sexual abuse, our job is to determine whether that allegation or complaint is credible,
mm-hmm.
and if credible, the suitability of the potentially offending cleric to his suitability for ministry.
And
that could mean whether or not there should be an exclusion from ministry at that point, or something shorter of that, maybe a suspension or restriction in terms of activity, especially so far as it relates to being around children. And so, and what I should also say is that this is decisions, we make decisions as a board, but our decisions really are recommendations to Bishop Soto.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, the person that's charged with making this decision, of course, is Bishop Soto. But we know that he values our recommendations. We have very open dialogue with the bishop. He's not ever present when we are actually deliberating and making our decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But we communicate with him on a regular basis, as he does us. And it's a very good relationship that makes us feel comfortable that he respects and very much wants us to be independent decision makers as it comes to our recommendations to him.
Yeah, in my conversations with the bishop over the years, it's very clear to me that word independent is very important to him. And also, he wants the unvarnished truth from you. He doesn't want somebody to say something just that is pleasant to hear. He wants to hear what you people really think because of who you people are in the community.
Yes, he's very open to that, and oftentimes just a letter that I write to him in terms of our recommendations just doesn't quite say it all, and I'll actually meet with bishops, so because these are not always easy cases. In fact, most mm-hmm. of the time they are not easy cases. They're nuanced. There's complexity to them, and so it's important for us that the bishop understands what our thinking was. And obviously, when I visit with him and have these discussions, we don't mention individual members, but I make sure that he understands the differences in perspective, if we did have differences of opinion, and how we ultimately arrived at our decision. And so I think that's valuable for us to engage with him that way. I think it's very valuable for him as well. We also make recommendations on with respect to policies and procedures around the protection of children mm-hmm. Against abuse within the diocese. And so that's another way that we weigh in, so to speak, on behalf of that issue, which is the protection of children is very, as you know, is very, very important to Bishop Soto. And he works very hard to make sure that his decisions are based on protecting children, at the same time ensuring that there is fairness to in the process for the clerk that is accused.
So do you work with Katita Schulman as well, the Safe Environment Coordinator?
We work with the Pastoral Care Coordinator only insofar as we'll get annual reports. On the other hand, what we do get is the information, the initial report from the complaining victim often comes through the pastoral care coordinator. And so that we kind of view that as the intake position. Of course, for us, we get information. The pastoral care coordinator does much more in terms of trying to assist that victim in any way possible.
So how does the report of this first come in? Does somebody who's a victim or even an alleged victim, just to use the term, do they contact the diocese, or do they usually contact law enforcement, and then law enforcement contacts you? How does that work?
Well, there can be a number of ways that it comes in. Coming in directly to the diocese from the victim or someone on his or her behalf can happen through, as I mentioned, the pastoral care coordinator. It could be a law enforcement or, for example, a child protective service report that gets to the diocese, and then that obviously is very important. And then, as you well know, there's litigation pending now against a number of clerics across the nation, but obviously more specifically within the Diocese of Sacramento. And so there are sometimes where an alleged victim will actually go to an attorney.
Right.
And that often makes it difficult for us to actually provide the support that really that pastoral care coordinator and the bishop wants to try to be open and hopefully help heal the alleged victim. And so when litigation comes first, then that often takes away that opportunity.
Yeah, it seems like it would precluded, and I'm not going to do any lawyer bashing at all, but generally when it gets involved in the legal arena, the the advice is let's just keep silent, or let's not have contact with the people you are potentially going to sue or people that you are currently suing.
Certainly for purposes of the IRB's responsibility, we actually need to have information from the victim. Typically, it's directly from the alleged victim, but other times it might be through statements the alleged victim provided to law enforcement or to some other credible entity that we have available to us. The bishop actually refers, when a complaint comes in and he becomes aware of it, actually refers this to the diocesan legal counsel, who then has that complaint investigated. And so by the time that the case is presented, if you will, to the IRB, there has been an investigation. And so for us, what we really look to, as I think common sense would suggest and any reasonable person would expect, is that we have information from that alleged victim, and we have, as well as from the accused offender, whether it be a priest or a deacon.
And do you also interview the alleged offender?
Well, as part of the investigation, the accused priest or deacon is always given the opportunity to be interviewed. And I should say that actually both the alleged victim and the accused priest or deacon is actually also invited to or is able to personally present to our board as well.
And you say priest or deacon, do you also handle cases that might involve a layperson?
No. That's handled separately.
Okay. So these, I don't know, I guess new cases is the right term. The cases that are now pending after the statute of limitations was, I guess, extended or went back.
Right.
Have you dealt with a number of those cases?
We have dealt with some of those cases because actually those cases, the majority of those cases are old cases.
Right.
So some of them may be new to us. If they went through the legal process as opposed to coming through the diocese, then some of those may be new to the diocese as well as to the IRB, but I don't know if most people really appreciate that there are very few cases that where we actually have a priest or a deacon that is living.
So in terms of, you know, settlements or resolution of a case, do you have any role in that? Does the board have any role in that?
No.
So you don't make recommendations on that in terms of what's the legal liability for the diocese here, what's likely to happen, that sort of thing?
No, not at all. Because really our primary purpose is to make recommendations to the bishop as it relates to one is the complaint or the allegation, is it credible? And for that we have the lowest possible standard, and that is it more likely than not that the complaint is true or credible? And the other part, as I think I mentioned, was the suitability of the priest or the deacon to continue to serve in ministry.
Yeah, and it's not a legal standard. It's just a standard that you folks are using for the protection of children.
And again, it's something that's been adopted by the I'm probably not using the right term, the Council of Bishops across the United States.
Yeah, the USCCB, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the Independent Review Board, as you well know, and some of your listeners might know, is they are all across the United States.
Right.
I like to say I'm very proud of our bishop because I think that he utilizes the IRB in the best and most important possible way, and is so good at really accepting our recommendations. But ours is really more focused on the safety of children within the diocese, those that kind of determination, and the making sure that the children of the diocese are safe.
Yeah, amen to that. And I know the bishop, just in his recent statements, since this has all hit in the last month or so, or last few months, has been focused just strictly on the victims, not on. He is talking about what might this mean to the diocese and how we're going to get through it and all that sort of things. But there's no. He said that the problem exists because of the abuse, not because of the victim seeking justice.
He has been excellent in that regard. But I do also want to emphasize that this is a very difficult road to travel for Bishop Soto because, protection of children and really some sense of justice for the victims is very highly important to him. On the other hand, he cares greatly about the priests and the deacons within the ministry.
Sure.
And not every allegation is being credible, and so. That's why it's just so important for us, for example, to have as much information as possible from all sides. That's why it's important that there's an investigation that occurs and all that information presented to the board. That's why we have a chance to say, we want you to please have the investigator check this out or that out. There's lots more to it, I think, than people might imagine. But it's very hard to, their vast majority of our priests and deacons are wonderful and dedicated and do such a wonderful job. And that this has been a major blight certainly on the Catholic Church and our diocese, but we have to remember all the wonderful priests and deacons that are out doing God's ministry every day.
Yeah, very well said. You must get cases too where there's not necessarily criminal activity. I mean, sometimes you hear this term boundary violations. How do you deal with those?
Give me three cases, and every single one will be different.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that might be a hard nut to crack, so to speak, because sometimes there can be, there has been inappropriate behavior that doesn't, if I'm understanding your question, that just doesn't quite cross the line of sexual abuse.
Right.
But it's not appropriate.
Right.
And so, and Bishop Soto also has, if that's a determination that's made, then there are efforts to make for purposes of that priest or deacon to actually to be counseled, to be educated, to even if appropriate, to be restricted from interaction with children. It really, every case is decided individually on its own merits, and the proper steps of that, after after decision or after coming to a termination case, or whether it's credible or not credible, then really that those are things that have to be considered as, are there still appropriate steps that need to be taken?
And obviously you're on the review board, the independent review board, so but we hear that since the charter in Dallas 20 years or so ago, 22 years ago, I guess, that we're not getting anywhere near the volume of cases reported, even like you say, the ones that are pending now after the statute of limitations was extended, are primarily old cases, some of them very old cases. There are some more recent, but we also hear, you know, well, it took so-and-so 40 years to come forward or 30 years to come forward. We're hopeful, though, that the lack of reporting the much lower numbers now are a result of all these actions that have been put in place. Do you share that opinion?
I think so. You know, as a prosecutor for many years, I also appreciate that there are cases that go unreported.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that, and that's whether or not it's through the program that the diocese has set up for victims to report and come forward, whether it's in the criminal justice context, whatever that might be. People, children especially, for whatever reason, don't report. On the other hand, when you create an environment that, one, is open to and supportive of reporting, when you have set up a system, as our diocese has, and I'm sure other dioceses have, where they have standards, they have training, there are a lot of policies and procedures in place on an ongoing basis that are always kept up front and visible, then I do believe that the incidents have decreased. I don't think there's any doubt about that, and so I would agree with you on that. And there's also more, you know, the standards are children aren't left alone with
mm-hmm.
adults.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be priests or deacons or whatever, within the context of the Catholic Church. That's part of their policy now. So these are steps that certainly Bishop Soto and other bishops around the nation have taken to be proactive, if you will, to be into prevention, to try to make sure things don't happen before the fact rather than having to deal with it after the fact.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
And you hope too, and it's really the, I guess, the unanswered question in our cases and in abuse out in general society is you hope some of these things have been put in place would serve as a deterrence to a potential abuser. I don't know if we know that that's true or not, because who's going to come forward and say, yeah, it actually helped me, but. Hopefully you would think that the lack of opportunity will deter the behavior.
I think you're 100% right on that. Also, seeing consequences.
Yes, right.
Seeing what, you know, when I was a prosecutor, we've always said is that consequences and punishments weren't just for that particular offender, but to send a message to others
right.
who might be deterred because they don't want the kind of consequence that they see happening.
Exactly. Well, do you get together with other review boards, you know, in the state of California, or you know, and share. Just, you know, not share information, but share methods or best practices or that kind of thing?
No, we haven't done that. I've only been on the board a relative short time in my time there, and I don't have any contrary information that occurred beforehand that individual board members would interact with other
mm-hmm.
Board members from other dioceses. But I do think that a variety of levels, whether it's the bishop or his representatives or the council, legal counsel to the diocese, and perhaps even some of the staff that is connected to working with the IRB, I do believe that they do exchange information regularly. And I even know the pastoral care coordinators, when there might be a complaint that comes in, that ends up after investigation actually belongs in another diocese, that there's exchange and communication even between the pastoral care coordinators. So there is communication going on, I think, relationships in place. It's just not at the individual level of IRB members.
You know, as a lifelong Catholic, I know I was stunned when this all hit, whenever it hit. You know, we think back to Boston and all of that. But, I mean, truly stunned and really stunned by the volume of it and hurt and ashamed and, you know, just because it had never been my experience with clergy. And I had a great number of priests growing up that I and deacons I greatly respected, and bishops, and it really hit hard. And yet I'm very, I don't know if proud is the right word, but I'm very, I guess, proud of the way the church is now responding, especially here in the Diocese of Sacramento, especially Bishop Soto, who just he wants to do right, number one, by the victims, but number two, to ensure that just never happens again. I mean, you probably can't ever say never. It's things are going to happen, but you can certainly dramatically reduce the incidences. And it seems as if what the church is doing here in the United States is almost a model for other organizations, and we know there are many that have had similar problems within their organization.
I agree with everything you just said.
Well, Jen Scully Royce, I've admired your career from a distance for many years, and thanks for all you did for Sacramento County, and thanks for what you're doing now for the Catholic Church. And thanks so much for joining us.
Inside of me, I feel your spirit is moving around me. I hear your voice, you're calling me closer. I know that you're here. And now